there's a very well-known story that's actually written in the Avos de Rebbe Nassim. It's a well-known story that's written in the Avos de Rebbe Nassim of Rebbe Akiva, who, depressed and broken, overwhelmed maybe, runs out of the Beis Medrash to the forest, and there he sees a river, sits down maybe to cry or to contemplate, to reflect, and he notices that there's a little bit of a crevice, a cavity, a hole in one of the rocks, and he's curious, doesn't understand what caused it or how it got there, and he continues thinking, and slowly but surely a drop of water somehow falls from above down into precisely where that crevice in the rock is, precisely that cavity, precisely that hole in the rock, and he realizes, wow, as we all know the story, that somehow drop after drop, the water penetrated into that rock, and although it looks like you can't really break into that rock, what's splashing water against a rock going to do? Constantly, consistently, time and time and time again, enough drops of water can actually penetrate into a heart. Rabbi Akiva then responds and says, well, if water can make such an impact on a rock, well then Kal Vachomer, Torah can eventually make an impact into my heart. That's the well-known Avos de Rebbe Nassim that people probably have heard growing up. You might have known as an Avos de Rebbe Nassim, but everyone knows the story. Rabbi Yisrael Salanter points out that this story, this particular Mishnah or Braisa, whatever it is, of Avos de Rebbe Nassim, takes place right in the beginning of Rabbi Akiva's life, religious life, I should say, right at the beginning of his tshuva process. He and his Rachel make this deal, and she sends him to the Beis Medrash, and he just gets there. Upon arrival, he's overwhelmed. Look how many sfarim are on the shelves, or look at how these people are talking and learning, or look at how unbelievably well-educated everyone is, and I don't know Aleph Beis, I don't know the Pesukim, I don't know anything about anything, and it's dafka, that experience, that caused Rabbi Akiva to run out, and the rest of the story you all know, as we just mentioned it moments ago. And I think that the standard Musar Shmuz, the standard message, the standard take-home message, you know, Musar Haskel, is about Rabbi Akiva's optimism. He sees a rock, and look what he pulls out of it. Look at the tremendous religious dream and optimism. Look at the ambition. Look how excited he is. And by the way, this really captures Rabbi Akiva's persona, his personality in general. He's the optimist, he's the dreamer, he's positive, he's the one who thinks Bar Kokhba is the Mashiach, he's convinced Mashiach's here. He's the one who captures and takes with him the positive hashkafa of Gamzu Latova they learned from his Rebbe Nochem Ish Gamzu. You know, even when he's dying, the skin is being ripped off of him, somehow he's smiling and positive about how he finally can fill the mitzvah of Ahavta Hashem Elokecha B'chol Nafshecha. The Gemara in Makos talks about his optimism at the end of when everyone else is crying at the side of the Chorban Beis Hamikdash, Rabbi Akiva is laughing. The last Mishnah in Yoma, which talks about Ashreichem Yisrael, after the Beis Hamikdash is destroyed, Rabbi Akiva's point is, look how great Klal Yisrael is. They may not have a Beis Hamikdash, but it's a Kadosh Baruch Hu's Mikvah, you know. It's a Kadosh Baruch Hu's Metares as Yisrael. And I think that's the standard message, the optimism, the dream that he's constantly learning from all situations in life and looking to bring out the most positive, looking for the sunshine on every single cloudy day. But I think there's a much more subtle and maybe even critical, relevant message, point, that you can really pull out of this story. Which is, what type of person would be so depressed and so upset and so overwhelmed from their encounter, their first time walking into the Beis Medrash? What if I would have walked into the Beis Medrash, and it'd be unbelievably overwhelming, I would have done one of a few things. Either I'd have quit, or I'd have just slowly began to work in the right direction, figuring I'll just do my best and get to wherever I can get to. That's not Rabbi Akiva's response. Rabbi Akiva's response was like, this is just out of control, it's too much, and ran out. At least according to Rabbi Yisrael Salanter, understands the historical context of this of his Rebbe Nassim. And Lechora, what's going on in his mind, I think this is of the utmost importance. Rabbi Akiva walked in with the mindset not just to be as successful as circumstances permit. Because if that would have been his goal, if his goal would have been, let's just do as well as I could do, and, you know, you can't blame me for not doing being the best. If I can just try and eventually get, you know, I'll do a good job. If I can compete, if I can achieve above mediocrity, he would just sit down, start learning, he'd get his B+, and he'd be happy. Lechora, his strong reaction of fleeing the Beis Medrash and sitting down and crying was really in response to his incredible self-perspective. The fact that he looked in the mirror and said, you got to do it all. When he walked into the Beis Medrash, he walked in confident he'd be able to conquer everything. And when he realized just how large the Sea of Torah was, instead of giving up on his goal entirely and quitting, or in terms of just readjusting his goal to what would have been the most natural, intuitive, appropriate change. Well, I can't get everything, I'll just get some. He was fully committed to achieving greatness. He was fully committed towards conquering, towards the exact same success he had set for himself before he even knew what it entailed. And as he realized just how difficult it's going to be, instead of giving up, it was just an overwhelming feeling. He ran out to the woods and saw this rock and said, wow, eventually I can do it. The point is not only Rabbi Akiva's optimism, the ability to see the sunshine again on a cloudy day, but the point is that Rabbi Akiva saw himself as a man with potential for greatness and on track to achieve it. I heard a great quote recently. I forgot where I saw it or heard it. But it said, whoever was saying it, said something along the lines of, winners are willing to do things that most people aren't willing to do. And the reason is because winners see themselves that way. They see themselves as people who have to get to this goal, no matter where it is, I'm just going to push through and, you know, not achieving. Failure is just not an option. How to get there, this way, that way, no details. The Medrash Rabbah points out that a wise person and a fool person can both walk into a room, and if there's a piece of bread hanging from the ceiling, the fool says, hey, it's too high. How am I supposed to reach it? And the wise man says, someone put that there, and I got to figure out how to get it. Eventually figures out a ladder. The truth is the details are less important. But if someone put that there, it means there's a way of getting it there. If someone wrote down every word in this book, it means someone else covered the material before me. I can as well. Metarigan has a vart, a little vart, which I always like to quote, where he asks, why is it that specifically Avraham becomes the one who is Avhamon Goyim? And the answer is because Avraham saw himself as an Av to Hamon Goyim. The more you see yourself as a winner, the more you become a winner. The more you see yourself with greatness, the more you achieve greatness. The more Avram saw himself responsible for Lot, for Yishmael, for Eliezer his Eved, for the people of Stone, for the entire world, for all the Ovdei Avodah Zarah who had walked through his tent, who he wanted to convince and convert and talk to about monotheism, he saw himself as a person responsible for the world. And by the way, Avraham Avinu was probably the most influential man in all of world history. The father of monotheism. Three major world religions really stem out of him. When you see yourself as a person who can achieve greatness, it makes it possible. It enables you. Facilitates it. If your goal is mediocrity, it's very difficult to outdo that goal. You have to dream about achieving greatness. I think very often, especially for the Shana Aleph guys, most of us have the standard high school mentality, which is, don't do such a great job and then blame your high school for being an Amoritz. I can't think of a high school in all of North America or England that people haven't finished the sentence by saying, of course we didn't know how to learn, I went to blank high school. and just fill that blanket with any single one that you guys all come from. Maybe it's their fault, maybe it's your fault, maybe it's everyone's fault. But at some point in time, the responsibility is, and the blame is no longer... You can't be a 50-year-old man and say, well, I went to X, Y, and Z high school. At some point in time, and you have to kind of like own your success rate. And for the Shana Aleph guys, you probably walked into that this week. And for the Shana Bet guys, you probably returned to it. At some point in time, this is probably that point in time, where how successful you are in learning, or religion for that matter, really boils down to you. And seeing yourself with greatness is very important. But I wanted to add on an unbelievable, another nekuda based upon an unbelievable little letter that Rav Meir Berlin wrote. Rav Meir Berlin became Bar Ilan. He's a Netziv son. Netziv had two sons, three children total. He had two wives, but at different times. So the older wife died, and then he married a second wife. So that's why there's a big age gap. I think the Netziv's first child was Rav Chaim Berlin. And then his second son was Rav Meir Berlin, who became Bar Ilan, the name of the university. Everything after him was a big tzion. He came to Eretz Yisrael. But Rav Chaim Berlin stayed in Russia. I think the age gap between the two brothers was 42 years. Which really is, you know, theoretically, it could have been his grandfather. And I think the Netziv had a third child, who was a daughter. I forgot her name, and she married, I think, Rav Rafal Shapiro, maybe, if I'm not mistaken. I think. In any event, so Rav Meir Berlin, or Bar Ilan, depending on what stage in life you're at, wrote this letter in the introduction to the Encyclopedia Talmudit. He was a big Tzioni Rav here in Eretz Yisrael, and probably one of the major Tzioni Gedolim, one of the Gedolim who was a Tzioni, I should probably say. The one who really got this whole project underway was a man named Rav Zevin. Rav Shlomo Yosef Zevin. One of the Gedolim of Yerushalayim, a huge Talmud Chacham. And he really started the Encyclopedia Talmudit, and what he did by himself, they have about 50 people doing and working on full time, and he put this farm out quicker than the 50 people do today. This is a tremendous knowledge of Torah, Yedius, brilliance. And they together opened up with this couple entry letters to the Encyclopedia Talmudit. If you've never seen it, it's a fascinating, fascinating book. It's about as obvious as it can be. It's bright yellow. Which only stands out on most farm shelves. And it basically goes through the alphabet with every single sugya and shas and almost every single tanoic, amoroic, rishonic, and achronic source that's there. You open up to this one page, you know, this one section of Ohel, and you got 40 pages on all the different minor makomas about Ohel. This Rashi and Sanhedrin and this Tosfos over there and this Rambam and this Shulchan Aruch and this Torah and all the different stuff. In any event, he writes a fascinating opening letter. He writes, after the Holocaust, when there was so much destruction, he picks up, there's a couple of the Jews left in the world. And there used to be a big nation. And because of the great destruction, we have a great responsibility of rebuilding. Im nishpesu bate kinesio to bate midrasho, yeshivo to bate opena. If they destroyed, they put to rest, they've obliterated shuls and bate medrash, yeshivas and women's institutions. Nigzu meretz achayim adirei haTorah v'talmidim b'nei gemara v'svara. They wiped out the gedolim, they wiped out the talmidim, they wiped out everything. They wiped out community after community, yeshiva after yeshiva, person after person. Therefore, ra'i lanu lahakim b'emtzi kochenu v'mali mekomam v'tov se kisaot v'safsalim kimosam. If they wiped out people who are going to sit and learn Torah, it's our responsibility to create more people to fill in the empty seats who the Nazis had killed. V'im shlish ha'am ha'yudi chadaliot, and if the Nazis had wiped out one third of the Jewish of the world Jewish population, chovaseinu, it's our responsibility, ki kol echad min ha'nisharim, every single person remaining behind, yiklot b'tocho yahadut b'chol ha'muvanim pishlo shemaleit achisaron. Each man has to step it up and become three people. Each man has to produce three times as much as they were planning on producing to make up for the lacking third of Klal Yisrael. And I was thinking, as I was preparing my thoughts for this little schmooze, the idea of creating greatness in Torah, greatness in religion, in Yiddishkeit, in Yadus, amongst ourselves, should not be limited to individual greatness. Certainly should extend to individual greatness, but should not be limited to individual greatness. When you start planning for another, or a first, or another, or a third, or whatever, second, whatever year you're up to in yeshiva, you should be thinking, what is going to give me the springboard to allow myself to progress forward, to move upward into greatness? Greatness in Yirat Hashemayim, greatness in learning, greatness in Ahavas HaTorah, greatness in Ahavas Hashem, greatness in Midos, greatness in dream, greatness in Ben Adam L'Chavero, greatness in Kavanah B'Tfilah, greatness in all the areas. There's a certain sense of national greatness that I think is somewhat obligatory, or at least maybe one should feel responsible for as well. Rabbi Akiva, when he became a Baal Tshuva, probably did not just do it for himself. The Gemara Pesachim writes, Rabbi Akiva used to hate the Rabbanim. He said he wants to bite them. Someone asked him, you mean like a way a dog bites? He goes, no, like a donkey bite. And they said to Rabbi Akiva, like, you know, what's the difference? And he goes, a donkey bites, he doesn't let go. And the point is, Rabbi Akiva probably thought about this. You with me? It wasn't a natural off-the-cuff comment. He had thought how much he wants to bite the Rabbanim. And I think the reason is because in the times of Bayis Sheni, people lacked Pashut Ben Adam L'Chaveiro. His Talmidim were lo nagu kavod zeh bazeh. The second Beis Hamikdash was destroyed just before his life because of Sinas Chinam. And in a life where the firmer you were meant the nicer you weren't, Rabbi Akiva had two stages of life. Number one is, I don't want a part of this. I'm disinterested. I don't want to serve in an army where they are disgusting to each other. And then there was a second stage in life where he realized that if someone has the capability of changing it, if someone had a big enough heart and a smart enough brain to really make an impact and to teach the world Zeklal Gadol BaTorah, in reference to the Pasuk of Ahavta Le'cha Kamocha, it's worthwhile to go do it. And being the optimist he was, the person with the dream that he was capable of mustering up, with the stick-withness and the commitment and the dedication that he had, it could be Rabbi Kiva's Baal Tshuva movement or decision was not just based upon himself looking for religious greatness, but rather seeing himself as part of Klal Yisrael. And I'll end with a challenge, which is also a plea. I certainly believe today Klal Yisrael needs the person you can turn yourself into. Klal Yisrael needs people who are B'nai Torah, who are Yirei Shemayim, who are Talmidei Chachamim, who can teach and preach, and more importantly, live and represent the values, the characteristics, the midos, the attributes that HaKadosh Baruch Hu has taught us we should cultivate amongst ourselves. Ultimately, reflecting Him, V'alachta b'drachav. Mahu rachu, mafatah rachu, mahu chanu, mafatah chanu. HaKadosh Baruch Hu, I believe, needs, maybe even more today than in many points of history, and maybe even more in our community and the communities we come from than others, people who can stand proud, representing both the commitment and learning and Bein Adam L'Makom that a Ben Torah is required to commit, as well as the normalcy, the down-to-earthness, the Bein Adam L'Chaveiro, the Midos, the friendliness, the personality, that also represent the Kadosh Baruch Hu's value set. I remember one of my first years here in Hakotel, I think it was the second year I was here. It was 7-8 years ago. And a Talmud walked over me the first day and he goes, "By Horn, are you modern Orthodox?" Like he's been waiting since I accepted him to ask me this question, you know? Like Mamash off the plane. And I said, you know, like, without getting into whatever you mean by that, I'll answer the question, as I always do with a couple different levels. Level number one is I try my best not to define myself as anything except for a Jew. There are certain things about the modern Orthodox world I identify with. There are certain things about the Yeshivish world I identify with. There's something about the Hasidic world I identify with. I'm always a big believer that when the Mishnah says, Ezu Chacham Lo Mid Mikol Adam, didn't mean specifically, but it could be interpreted this way. You should daven like a Breslaver. You should care about Eretz Yisrael like a Tzioni. You should learn like a Brisker. You should didactic Bahalacha like a Litvak. You should have the fire of a Satmar, but the love of Klal Yisrael as a Chabadnik. You should put yourself together with the best possible amount and shitas and character traits that the world has. So I don't consider myself, I don't want to isolate, I don't want to box myself into one particular group. But that wasn't what you asked me. But I thought it was important to say. Now I'll try to answer the question. The reason why I probably identify with this community more than any other community is for two reasons. Number one is I find it the most MS. I think it's the most true, and I'll address it very quickly before I get to the second point, which is what I want to focus on tonight. I told him, I believe a Kadosh Baruch Hu is a sophisticated God. The Torah is a very sophisticated book, and our style is a very sophisticated style. I think it's not just by chance. I think it very much reflects the MS. Not condescending towards others who disagree. The right to stand for my own shita, certainly if it's within the realm of Hashkafas HaTorah. But there's a second reason why, and if I was mamish torn 50-50, if I should put myself in the modern Orthodox box, or the yeshivish box, or any other box you got out there, I think there's a second characteristic, or a second, not a second, there's a second, at least reason to help me push and decide to live the life and identify with the values and community that I chose to identify with, which was, I sincerely believe we can make a difference in the communities we come from. There aren't enough people out there preaching the message of normalcy, of down to earth, of Zionism, messages that most of the Balabatim want to hear with a sense of frumkeit, or the other half of the Balabatim want to hear with a sense of normalcy and open-mindedness and sophistication and breadth and depth. And therefore, when you're working on developing in greatness, it should be a personal greatness that you're aiming towards, a personal greatness that you want to grow into. But on the other hand, helping on a nationalistic level, or at least a community level, really both, helping achieve greatness in our community, helping achieve greatness amongst our nation, helping achieve greatness amongst Klal Yisrael in the days that we live in today. And it means enabling yourself to answer and to think and to develop into people who are great, whether it's leaders in the rabbinical world, leaders in the lay leader world, leaders who are not leaders at all, but leading from a very quiet position, leaders of their families and how they raise children. I think the greatness that we should be aspiring towards is both personal and communal, just like Rabbi Akiva. People should be matzliach in this zman, it's a short zman, in setting forth the proper goals and the proper diligence so the rest of the year can help them accomplish these goals as well as everyone else's. People should have a good chance. One sec, one sec, one sec, one sec, one sec, one sec.